Hello, folks. Welcome back to Who Booked This after our lovely summer vacation. I'm Stephen Graham.
I'm J.R. Goldberg.
And here we're ready to talk about a request by me. For once. We are going
to
talk.
I guess before we decided to do our vacation, this would have timed out really, really well. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we both had some shit going on, but we're back, probably better than ever.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. How does it feel to be the co-host of the one and only best wrestling podcast in the world?
I mean, it feels great. Is there like a specific metric that we got that, or are we just declaring?
Well, we're the only one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are we the only wrestling podcast? I feel like that's, yeah.
Well, hosted by two white guys, probably.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, pretty, uncharted territory, I would say.
Yeah. It's very rarefied air.
Yeah.
But, boy. Let's talk.
I saw a joke one time that was like, a group of geese is called a gaggle. A group of 20 something white guys is called a podcast.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. That was funny.
All right. So, I didn't catch the date. This is like mid-November 1986 episode of The Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah, in honor of season 2 coming out just a couple weeks ago. Have you watched season 2 yet, Steven?
I'm halfway through.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I have not watched it yet. Did we talk about this on the air or off the air about our thoughts on the first season of Blood?
I don't think we talked about it on the air.
Okay. You said you enjoyed it, right?
I mean,
you
loved it, yeah.
Yeah. I remember it came out last year while me and my wife or taking like a little sort of mini vacation, and we like watched it together, and I think like both of us were expecting to enjoy it more than we did, but I will eventually give the second season a chance.
Yeah, I think so far the second season's better.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because like there's not as much to set up.
Yes.
So it kind of just goes right into the story.
Yeah, I feel like the setup and the exposition of the first season almost does it a disservice, because the setup is, in a way, like setting up how horribly unlikable most of the people are.
Yeah, they're a lot more likable in season 2.
Yeah.
And then there's there's a polarizing episode where basically it's essentially an episode of Glow.
Uh-huh.
So you can look forward to that. But yeah, I recommend. Really great show. But this was something else. So
yeah, this was not necessarily a really great show.
So what's your experience with Glow?
This is the first full episode of Glow I've ever watched.
Okay. See, this is the first wrestling I ever watched.
Oh yes. Well,
and this I think, because I remember the Hogan Orndorff Saturday Night's Main Event cage match.
Uh-huh.
And that was early 87. So I was watching wrestling before then. So this might have been around the time when I first saw Glow. Very possible.
Wow. So yeah.
This might have been the first episode of wrestling I ever watched. Probably not.
I'm glad you stuck with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know.
Boy. I feel like I love the idea that like little Steven was watching this in the, you know, mid to late 80s.
I had my spreadsheet open.
Yeah, and was just like, you know what? Like this episode of Glow, like this is the thing that's going to make me devote the next 30 years of my life.
Yeah. Like, that's like fucked up.
This is the deal sealer right here.
Well, it was probably it was Mount Fuji.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good segment at the end.
It
pretty
was.
Good, like, pull apart brawl.
But let's get into it before that.
Yeah.
So first, I don't know how we want to break this down. There's a lot of, let's just talk about the different things, because there's different, like, repeating things that happen.
Yeah.
Like there's.
So basically, right? There's no entrance theme.
No.
Unless you count them wrapping themselves to the ring.
But that's shot before. Like,
a pre-taped rap where all of them do like a little rap about their character.
And who they're facing.
And who they're facing, kind of, maybe.
And they're all horrible.
Terrible. Terrible. Like, so this is really funny because this show, this episode of GLOW, is probably closer in production to current day televised wrestling than anything after GLOW until the mid 2000s, because it is the most overwritten and like tightly produced episode of television possible. Like, everything is like clearly they're reading off a script. Like there's no creativity involved whatsoever. Like it is 100% what Vince McMahon now wants a wrestling show to look like. GLOW is the original sports entertainment.
That's like weirdly correct.
Yeah. I'm shocked. I watched it. Like, not that I think GLOW was prescient, because I think that like what they were trying to do was probably out of necessity, and what WWE does is out of a frustrating fear of losing control, you know. Yeah. But yeah, no. So they have these terrible raps, like, and I didn't like write any of the lines down, but they're all awful.
Well, I wrote down the first one because I was like, you know, we got to start here.
Yeah, so read it off.
One is fucking Sylvester Stallone's mom, Jackie Stallone.
Yeah,
like legit mother.
Yes,
this is not a work. And so. Someone's facing Jungle Woman.
Yep.
She says something along the lines of Jungle Woman wanted to go visit her family, but the zoo was closed. Burn. That was her rap. The thing about these raps that like really blew me away is like none of them were on beat.
Okay. So let's talk about this for a while. Cause I feel like this is one of the most mystifying things ever. Like, I wouldn't necessarily ever encourage anyone to watch the entire hour of this. Which we both
I'm going to insert clips like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Please insert clips. Like, show, like, put in the Farmer's Daughter rap, which is way later in the show. But, like, they're, like, part of me thinks that they must have recorded all of the raps. And like that whole thing without any music. And then they added the music in later in production.
That actually makes sense.
Yeah. But like it does make sense to like write off how they're all so bad at rapping. But it makes no sense in terms of why they would do that. Ever. They also like you. No one can dance.
No one can dance.
Like, I wish
to be about no that room. Is, you know, some of these, like, where do you think they got these people?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes. I would bet that some of them have had experience dancing on stage.
Yeah.
In small clubs, perhaps. But like, the only way I can describe the dancing is like, if you crossed the episode of Seinfeld where Elaine is dancing really badly with the girls from the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love video. Like that's the idea, I think, of like the general lack of effort and rhythm. Yeah. If you've ever watched the Puebla Edecanes try and dance, like, this is like 1,000 times.
Oh, man. See, I really wish I took more notes on the rapping, because, like, every time it came up, I just wrote more rapping.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, an interesting fact, I just looked it up.
Yeah.
Do you know what came out 3 days after this episode aired?
I have no idea.
License to Ill by the Beastie Boys.
Oh, yeah.
So not they like were, rap was I imagine
that whole album was filmed in that 72-hour period. That they watched this episode of GLOW, and they were like, guys, we got it. And they just recorded the album and released it right then.
Yeah. That's the origin story I always heard.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, man. So every one of these raps, they're just horrible. They're bad jokes. There's, I like this too. When the babyface finishes their rap, all the babyfaces cheer. When the heel finishes their rap, all the heels cheer. Yeah. They're very supportive of each other.
Yeah. By the way, the heels cheer way more, and the things they're cheering are horrible.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know how to segue into this. But
are we going to talk about Palestina?
We will. But yeah. Like, everyone is the most stereotypical. Like, you thought Kamala was bad. Everyone is Kamala times 100.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, so, one of my notes here, and we'll, I mean, skipping ahead slightly, is the Little Feather rap is so racist.
Oh my god.
And then the next note I have under that is just, this whole segment is preposterously racist.
Okay, so, Little Feather does a horrible Indian racist stare, like she's way past Chief J. Strongbow.
She makes like references to like Wounded Knee, like it is horribly racist.
And she does the not their war cry, but everyone calls their war cry thing.
The pro wrestling war cry.
Yeah. Do you know their real war cry is a lot more scary?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrifying if you've ever actually heard what their war cry actually sounded like. Anyways, and then she comes to the ring and she's wearing like nothing.
Yeah. Like
a, she's wearing skin toned colored like underwear. Like you can't even, like she looks like she's naked.
Yeah. With some like leather fringe basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's insanity. And they bill her as like 106 pounds. And she's facing the Russian, right?
Yeah, Ninotchka. Yeah.
Yeah. Who just destroys her in like a second.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So, I mean, a couple other things. I mean, we could talk about it. We're just going to skip
down. Yeah, there's no point of structuring this.
So, yeah, they didn't structure their show. Why would I structure my review? So, a couple things here that I just, you know, want to go backward. In all the matches or most of the matches, not only do they cut to the pre-recorded rap of them rapping about their character, but they
insert promos.
They do multiple insert promos per match. The matches are like all 4 minutes and there's probably at least 45 seconds of insert promos for each one.
And what I like, there was one of the matches where the person went to the top to deliver a move.
Yeah.
The music played to signalize the segment was over.
Yeah.
Then she hits the move and pins her. They told us the match was over before it was over. They couldn't even fucking wait till she pinned him.
Yeah.
Fuck. Insanity.
Oh, man. Yeah. Was that the Jungle Woman?
Yeah, I think.
Match, yeah. The Jungle Woman match was probably the match that was like, it wasn't the best match, but it was the match that was like most structured like a standard pro wrestling match.
This was my favorite thing about it was solid enough, but what I liked was that her second was Nature Boy.
Yeah, the Nature Boy
was in her corner. Can you describe this Nature Boy?
Facially, he kind of looks like a younger, dumber Shawn Michaels.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And he's dressed like a knockoff Tarzan costume that you get at like a year-round Halloween store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nature Boy.
This
is 1986, by the way. We've seen Buddy Rogers. We've seen Ric Flair. We've seen Buddy Landell.
Yeah. And that there were probably multiple Nature Boys running around. I would say that this Nature Boy was probably the best Nature Boy of 1980.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
Yeah. I mean, Flair wasn't very good in 86, you know?
We
should get Parv to do a comparison, a Big Lov comparison of the Nature Boys in 1986.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd be down for that. So, man, what else?
This is the only wrestling show I've ever watched that had a laugh track.
This was Hee Haw.
Yeah. Yeah.
So besides the matches, besides the raps, besides the inserts, there was just horrible comedy sketches.
Terrible comedy sketches.
Just like
the only one that legitimately made me laugh was there was a one where there was like a Satanist character.
Oh, what do I have it here? What's your name?
I have no idea what her name is.
I haven't written some.
But while you're looking for that, they make a terrible joke about how she's doing a sacrifice to Satan. And then she says, it's Satan's favorite. And then someone asks, what is it? And she says, devil's food cake. And then they light candles on it because it's Satan's birthday. And then they sing happy birthday to Satan. And they go, happy birthday, evil Satan.
Yeah, that's good.
And that legitimately was very, very funny.
So that was the Princess of Darkness.
Okay.
And so before each of these comedy sketches, too, they put the title of the sketch on the screen.
Uh-huh.
And this one was the Satanic Services with Princess of Darkness.
Yeah. I would say that this segment by the Princess of Darkness was roughly about as satanic as anything Kevin Sullivan ever did.
Yeah, she had a cool like mask or paint or something.
Yeah, she had paint or something. I mean, she looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, not intimidating necessarily, but like, you know, they put some effort into it.
Yeah. All right. So David McClane in a phone booth pretending it's his office was one of the like most unbelievable things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh God, yeah, that was terrible.
So he gets a call. He pretends to be his own secretary.
Yep.
I feel
like that was a big joke in the '80s. Like,
yes, yeah. I guess you're pretending to be important because you.
Right.
But he's in a phone booth with a desk. So he gets the phone from the secretary, and it turns out he's just being offered dance lessons, which. He should have took him up on it because no one knew how to dance.
No, yeah. No one knew how to dance.
And then he hangs up the phone after he's outraged that they offered him dance lessons. And he yells at the secretary. And then it's like, oh, shit. I'm an idiot. It was unbelievable.
That one was very bad. The California Doll one where she just says puns.
Yeah.
Like one of them, she's like, if April showers bring May flowers, then May flowers must bring pilgrims. And then there's like raucous.
Oh, I got more. Lumberjack. If a lumberjack is fired, does that mean he got the axe?
Yeah.
And like, if runners get athlete's feet, do astronauts get mistletoe?
Yeah. Which made her laugh. Like she legitimately laughed at that one, which was hilarious to me. All right.
The absolute worst one for me was the Spanish Kitchen. Do you remember this one? So there's a dude at a table. He calls over the waiter. And he's like,
yes.
There's something wrong with my chicken. And she goes, what? And he goes, one leg is shorter than the other. And she goes, what are you going to do? Dance with it or eat it? And then she laughs hysterically. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even a joke, right?
It's not. And, like, she seemed, like, angry. Like,
yeah.
It was baffling to me how that got on the air.
Oh, yeah. There's a So going back to the, you know, quote unquote action, I think this may be noteworthy as the first time an American military character or team has ever been the clear heel on American television. Like, they are they are probably the big heels of the show, realistically.
Yeah, they were up there. Corporal Cully and Attaché.
Yeah. There's also a great moment in there where the announcer is like, Attaché is a great wrestler who just chooses to fight dirty. And then Attaché immediately comes in the ring and somehow botches like a stomp. Like, cannot even do a stomp.
They also, I just looked at my notes. This is the match where they played the music before the finish.
Yeah, they totally missed the finish. They didn't even show the pin.
And this is the one when David McClain was talking about how they were Marines. They trained the fighters. They used to fight men in the army. And then they were discharged. And we don't know why they were discharged, but it's probably because they were evil type of deal.
Yeah.
I wonder if they ever paid that off, but.
You know, there's like multiple times where he on the announcing is like, there's unsubstantiated rumors that I can't get into about this character, which may be the laziest storytelling device of all time. Like, I haven't actually thought about this, but I don't know. Like,
oh, man. What else do we have? We have Ivory giving us dating advice.
Yeah, Tina Ferrari. Yeah. I'm sad. So the only thing of Glow that I'd seen actually was like the big group rap that they must do later where she rapped about her Italian blood. But Ivory is on there. I will say, like, Ivory really did not age from like this to the Attitude Era. So she like now. Basically looked the same. Yeah, or now, I guess, really. She looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
So I credit the Italian blood, personally.
And something we have to tell everyone about these skits.
Uh-huh.
They're like 20 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like they're like before and after commercial type things. You know, where like they come back from commercial and there's a skit before they go back to the action.
There's at least like 12 of them in the show.
There's a ton of them, right? Like it is the big character development portion of it, but like it's really just an excuse for them to tell like poorly written television jokes.
Speaking of poorly written jokes.
Uh-huh.
This skit was probably the most offensive, maybe? That's hard to say on this show. But
which one?
This was Dr. Feels and Grope Medical Corporation.
Oh, yeah, the gynecology. Wow,
gynecology, plastic surgery.
And psychiatry.
Yeah. And then there's like 2 seconds of a dirty doctor groping someone, and that's it?
Yeah, he tells a terrible joke. He's like, what's the difference between true love and a hamburger? And the woman's like, I don't know. And then he's like, great, let's go to lunch. And that's the end. There's no payoff.
Just unbelievable. Shocking.
When they later reference Dr. Feels and Gropes later.
Oh, yeah, I missed that.
Yeah, like there's like a minor mention of them like in one of the other sketches.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So
there's a lot of like now that we think about it, like because there's that advice.
Oh, that's horrible.
All in one too, which is horrible. But that also mentions like doctors sexually harassing patients. Like that is a recurring theme.
This is not 2018 friendly.
No.
If you have respect for women, if you're a feminist and you think men and women should be treated equal, this should not be what you're watching.
Like, I'm not even sure if this was in good taste in 1986.
I don't think it was.
Like, I think that this is like pretty trashy, even for the mid 80s. This whole show is just like one dude locking himself in a room with $500 worth of cocaine and writing as many one-liners as possible. And then he like made a wrestling show about it.
Yeah. That's essentially the first season of GLOW, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. I think. Right. Yeah. I feel like this establishes that better.
Yeah. Yeah. This was unbelievable. And like, I gotta say, some of the matches weren't horrible. Like, they were decent enough little squashes. Like, the Russian.
I thought the Nanachka, like, full segment was actually really good pro wrestling. I mean, there's no actual good pro wrestling in it, but, like, from an abstract standpoint, minus the overt and terrible racism, like, having her do a squash and then talk shit about Americans and minorities.
Unworthy minorities.
Unworthy minorities. And then have, like, a black babyface come out.
Ebony.
Challenge her. What's that?
Ebony.
Ebony, yeah. And then also basically losing a squash. Like, that's pretty good pro wrestling, you know? Yeah. Like,
I like that she took her apart with, like, submission moves and shit, too.
Yeah, there was a point in that match where I honestly thought Nanachka was setting Ebony up for a Lamagistral, but it didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh, and then we got a great skit with her right after, too, where she's
talking. Oh, yeah, General Electric. Oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah, she's talking to KGB, and they're telling her, oh, you need to get this great military expert. And she's like, oh, what's his name? And like, General Electric.
Yeah. Oh, God. Terrible.
I don't know what that joke means. Like, was she getting pranked? Or is the KGB
that inept?
Well, I mean,
General Electric is a company, right? Do you not know that because you're in Canada?
What? Sorry.
The General Electric was like a big American company?
Well, I know that, but like, is the KGB very inept? Or was she getting a prank call?
From the KGB? Yeah, that was unclear to me as well. I think the implication was that they were inept. But it did come across as though they were prank calling her.
What we've learned in the last little while is that Russia's not very... Their KGB is very inept. They're very apt, I guess.
Way less inept than we were led to believe by the American government for the past 70 years or so.
Yeah. There was one commercial I thought was neat. Well, besides the cowboy who was selling used cars using a John Wayne accent, There was another one for a wrestling news show.
Yeah, they played it a couple of times.
Yeah, it starts like with Typhoon getting hit in the head. Show.
Yeah.
Well, not Typhoon, but whatever his name was at the time.
Yes,
It showed AWA and NWA and WWF.
UWF, too.
Yeah. That was cool. I would watch a weekly news show in the 80s.
100%. Someone should do like a kayfabe YouTube show, just like summing up the week. That would be pretty cool, actually.
Before I did this podcast, I was going to do a kayfabe podcast, but...
Yeah, I remember that. Like, I just don't think I'd be good at that sort of
thing. I don't think anyone... I think it'd be too hard.
Yeah, I think it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, we're not all as good as
mostly because, like wrestling isn't written well anymore.
Yeah, that's
so,
the
like,
problem.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's no actual, like, interesting segments to talk about, so...
And plus, I can't watch the TV, so...
Yeah.
That's also a problem.
So there's a like a great line in this Nanachka Ebony segment where Ebony comes in and she's wearing like a golf t-shirt and like shorts, like
something like that.
She doesn't look particularly stylish or anything. But then the David McLean says she's from Detroit and she has all the style of Isaiah Thomas.
What?
Who was like, for those of you who may not know, like a you know, very good, you know, all-star level basketball player around this time. You know, this is right before the Pistons won championships. So Isaiah Thomas is sort of at the height of his powers. But was like, I would never think that Isaiah Thomas was like stylish.
I don't think they're talking about fashion. Yeah. I think they're talking about his, like, his style on the court.
Oh, I see. Okay. Got it. That makes more sense. Still doesn't make a ton of sense.
No.
What makes more sense?
I think I know about General Electric. Wasn't that a piece on Monopoly?
No, General Electric is a real company in America.
But, like, Park Place is a real place, isn't it?
Yeah, in Atlantic City.
I don't know. That's where I think it is. General Electric.
This is embarrassing. We're both embarrassed. At least you're not American. I don't really have any.
So, we've been dancing around it, but let's get to Palestina the terrorist.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right. So, first of all, Palestina's rap is literally just, I want to kill every American. She ends one of her verses with the line, I am not afraid to kill.
Yeah.
And then the next verse is how she's coming to America in a plane she hijacked. And if she has to kill every American, she will.
Yeah.
At least, every American.
At least that rhymes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's fine. You know, I may have rhymed it more there than it actually rhymed.
Well, it'll be inserted.
It had more rhythm than most of the other girls. Let's put it that way.
All right. And then she gets in the ring and she's obviously Muslim.
Yeah.
Because she's a terrorist and she has, she does her prayer, which, while she's doing her prayer, which there's nothing wrong with someone praying. Like, I'm an atheist. Well, people can pray all they want. I don't give a shit.
In 1986, there was plenty wrong with prayer, by the way. I mean, like, we laugh about this. Like, I mean, people honestly, in 2018, like, if someone came out and did and just started doing Allahu Akbar, right?
Yeah.
In the middle of a WWE ring, like, they would get booed heavily, right? Like,
yeah. Here's an embarrassing story. The pharmacist, a new pharmacist started at my work, and, you know, she'd been there a couple weeks, we were friends, whatever. She was in the back room, just like sitting at one of the desks, and she was, to me, she was like just leaning down, and I was like, oh, are you all right? And that's when I realized she was doing her little prayer. Ah. And I felt really bad because I didn't recognize that.
At least it's coming from a place of concern and sincerity.
Unlike Sally, the farmer's daughter, who just sits beside her and sings.
Yeah.
You imagine someone doing the Lord's Prayer and then someone coming up beside them and just singing a song.
Just singing like a horrible country song or something, like literally something out of Hee Haw.
Yeah.
You know?
So that was
it was awful.
This is like Sally was a giant bigot.
Yeah. I mean, which is actually like probably like, I mean, her story is that she's like a 17-year-old girl from Nebraska who like just moved to Vegas to be part of GLOW. So like, that's actually a pretty good character, right? Of course, she would be like, totally ignorant bigot.
She took a big bump.
She did take a big bump. She actually had the best spot on the whole show, and it's a spot that someone should steal, where she does like a victory roll out of the corner where she gets up on the shoulders and like does the front roll. But then she like keeps her legs grapevined and turns it almost into like a Three Amigos type like victory roll spot. Yeah. Like someone could do that spot now and it would look really good. I'm just going to say that.
It would.
But that was like the best wrestling move.
Yeah. Until the terrorist pulled sand out of her pocket and dumped it on Sally.
Literally uses pocket sand, like Dale Gribble from King of the Hill style.
And then throw sand at the ref and then throw more sand. She pulled up packets of sand, though, at that point. I was disappointed by that. Like, I thought it should all just be sand that's left over in her pocket from when she came over.
Yeah, but also not to be like gross and sexist, but like I can't be the only person who is totally distracted by Palestina's lack of chest support.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Yeah.
We
all know that.
What
else? I guess we have the finals, the main event.
Well, I mean, like I'm sorry, I don't want to. Like, before we go on to that, which should, but like, I just want to go over Palestina again because like,
it was horrible.
So the owner is the announcer, right? Like the owner of GLOW is the announcer,
yeah.
Right? So like, he talks consistently through the match about how there's like dark rumors about Palestina that he can't repeat on air what she did. And she raps as well about how she's like actually killed people and like wants to kill Americans and is like a trained terrorist and she's hijacked a plane. Right.
Yeah.
So like kayfabe wise, one, like what possibly can be the dark rumor if she literally comes out and says like, yeah, I killed people. Right.
What else did she do?
Yeah. What else could she possibly have done? And then also like, what is the thought process of like holding auditions for GLOW? And then this girl shows up and she's like, yep, I'm a terrorist. And he's like, yeah, this girl, I need to hire her. Right. Like she needs to be part of this.
But not only like I'm a terrorist, but I'm going to call myself the terrorist.
Yeah, literally, I am the terrorist.
Insane. This. Okay, we should vote right now.
Okay.
What was the most racist, bigoted gimmick?
Oh, God. I think it's Little Feather.
Palestine is very close. Palestine. It's between those two.
Yeah. Maybe Palestina gets put over the top because Littlefinger gets called out as racist by Nanachka. Like, Nanachka cuts a quote-unquote heel promo to the audience. Like, she cuts an in-ring promo after defeating Littlefinger where she's like, I refuse to beat up Littlefinger because the American people have destroyed the Native Americans. Like,
yeah, she didn't want to beat her up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she didn't beat her, but she was reluctant about it, I guess. Palestina was like racist and then presented as like, as without commentary, I guess, you know? So maybe it's Palestina.
And to clarify, it's Little Feather. It's not the dude from
Game of Thrones. Oh, do I keep saying Littlefinger?
He's a dick, too, though.
It would be great if that dude was part of GLOW.
Oh, there would be more deaths, that's for sure. All right, so we got a main event here. After all this, it's Mount Fuji, or Mountain Fuji, taking on Hollywood and Vine?
Yeah, so it's Little Fuji. Right,
she comes out. I don't think she was supposed to be part of the match.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's okay. Mountain Fuji's little sister, I guess.
Yeah. So here's where I get confused, and like maybe I'm just not smart enough to be watching GLOW, or maybe by this point I just wasn't paying very much attention. But like I thought they advertised it as a handicap match against Little Fuji, and then Mount Fuji came out to defend her, and then they declared it a handicap match against Mountain Fuji instead of a tag match, which I thought was hilarious.
That's not what happened. I don't know why Little Fuji was there.
Okay.
She was just there. But why'd they portray her as like a little kid?
Yeah. They portray her as like completely inept, right?
Yeah. Like she was clearly like 20 something.
Yeah.
Weird. And I saw this in the opening for the show, and I was very excited because they said, oh, coming up, Mount Fuji versus Hollywood and Vine. And they showed a clip of Hollywood and Vine using a chainsaw, cutting a Care Bear in half. And I was so excited.
Yeah.
But I didn't see this in the main event.
No. Hollywood and Vine, like, I mean, which like is very funny. It's like obviously I was not living in LA in the 80s. There was like a large acting problem with like kids.
You have gotten really quiet since I started.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Can you hear me more?
Yeah, I can hear you now. So it's just
okay.
A couple seconds of silence, and then you can pick it up. So I can edit it properly.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is a weird thing of like, were the both of Hollywood and Vine rapped about being pickpockets.
From the streets of L.A., right?
From the streets of L.A. And, like, obviously, I was not in L.A. in 1986, but was there a large punk pickpocketing problem in Los Angeles in the mid-80s? Like, I can't imagine that there was just, like, a bunch of punk Oliver Twists running around, right? Like that's not a thing that actually happened. That's a thing out of, like, a Charles Bronson movie.
There was punks.
Sure.
I don't know about the pickpockets.
Yeah, I mean, they probably stole things from stores and stuff. Yeah. And maybe they held up people, but, like, I can't imagine that they, like, pickpocketed people. That's not, like, a thing that happened.
I don't think so.
They against Mount Fiji here do maybe one of the worst all-time rope running spots I've ever seen.
I was really zoned out at this time, so why don't you explain it?
First of all, it felt like they ran the ropes for like 8 minutes. I don't know how long, it was probably like 15, but it felt like forever. But Mount Fiji literally is just standing stationary, and they both do like crisscross rope running, spot, but like they don't make any contact with her or like make any attempt to like confuse her. She doesn't sell it in any way. She literally just stands stationary without turning around, and then eventually one runs into her and then falls down, like takes a back bump off of it. At the end of the spot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she beats them up a bit. Attila the Hun comes out?
Matilda
the Hun. Okay. She comes out. They set up Mount Fuji versus Matilda the Hun for next week or the future or whatever. And
It's like a Haas battle.
Yeah. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
And then
Little Fiji takes a back bump onto the concrete. She takes a bump on the outside.
There was some crazy bumps on the show.
I will say, like, I mean, I said this is the beginning of the show, but like that end segment is actually like pretty all right. Like after the match where they're like just screaming and yelling at each other, like it's a pretty chaotic, cool thing, you know? It's a good way to end a TV.
Okay, so like they ended this episode of GLOW with hype for the next match for next week, a reason to tune in, and it seemed like a little heated segment.
Yeah.
How often does Raw end that way?
Kind of once a month, maybe.
Yeah. Like isn't this how you should end TV? Be like,
yeah, every week.
Yeah. Next week, these two fuckers are gonna fight. And they hate each other. Oh, okay.
Right. Like, people used to make fun of Nitro for, like, going off the air right as people were about to start fighting and stuff like that. But, like, that's way better than whatever Raw does now, which is just, like, a match ends most of the time, you know?
Yeah, and they do the weird thing, like, the last hour doesn't count or whatever. Like, the main event's in the middle of the show or whatever.
Yeah.
Going on. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't watched in a while. But...
it's not good. You're not missing anything.
That Saudi Arabia thing really left a sour taste in my mouth.
Sure.
So the show ends then with Mountain Fiji sleeping in bed. And she's dreaming. She's a showgirl. Some other person comes up to her and says, "Wow, Fiji, every man loves you." She goes, "Yeah." And the show ends.
Yeah. And then... while the credits are rolling on the show, they just have cut in, like, you know, insert vignettes of girls doing promos where they literally are just shitting on the other wrestlers.
Yeah.
They're not even jokes. They're just like, this girl sucks and is ugly.
Yeah. Man. They at least really let you know who the heels and who the faces are.
Do they?
Well, they're in different rings when they do the raps.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, they are. I guess the heels are mean and the faces are ditzy. I feel like, I mean, that's really insulting when you think about it that way. But like, yeah, I guess that's
probably. That's for sure. Yeah. They all got that. So this was an experience.
This absolutely was an experience.
So normally just do one match. Here you got like three matches and a bunch of other stuff. So a supersized episode to make up for us missing a couple weeks. But boy, we have, what's your final thoughts on this?
You know, I'd say that it set back women's wrestling, but that's really not true because women's wrestling was, sort of consistently set back by everything in America from GLOW until about like last year. So.
That's fair. And that's the only wrestling I want to watch, but not like this.
Yeah, no.
So what's coming up next week? I didn't write down who it was from. So we'll get you that information next week. But they have suggested that we watch, I believe it's a New Japan match.
I think so. I think you're right.
Dr. Wagner Jr., Giant Silva, and Shocker. versus El Puma Inoue, Giant Singh, and Shibata.
Yeah, that is a match. I've never seen this match, so I'm actually really excited.
I've never seen it either, and do we have access to it?
I think it's on YouTube, okay. Right?
Well, we'll find it somehow, and we'll watch it.
Yeah,
this is like a war-level shit right here.
Yeah, this should have been in war. Those are two great war tag teams.
One is two-thirds luchadors, which is very bizarre.
Yeah.
So that's right up our alley. So we'll watch that next week. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Do you recommend anyone watch this?
No.
No, me neither. Don't watch it.
Watch the show on Netflix, I guess.
That's way better, yeah. And they have some of the same characters.
Yeah.
Just like
you can see where it's inspired. Yeah. You know,
Allison Breeze, the Nanishka. They have Mant Fiji, kind of, but by a different name.
They have there's a segment with Americana, which is basically like Britannica, right?
Yeah. So yeah, you can see in that show's 100 billion times better than GLOW from the 80s, or we just watch a really bad episode of GLOW. Maybe we have to watch more.
Yeah, we should just watch all of them. This should just be a GLOW podcast from now on.
Man. We'll watch every episode of GLOW.
How many episodes of GLOW were there?
I think it ran like 3 years.
Oh, Jesus, God, no, I'm not doing it.
It ran quite a long time. I'm going to look that up. So, GLOW, founded 1986. It says here, oh wow, okay, so just on the sidebar of Wikipedia, so founded 1986, headquarters, Las Vegas, 1986 to 1992.
Oh god.
Owner, Meshulama Reclis, from 1986 to 2001, and now it's owned by Ursula Hayden. So it's still owned.
Someone just has the copyright, I guess.
That's fine. So. Yeah. Man, I don't know how long it ran. Oh, okay, here's the champions. So from December 85 to December 89. Oh, okay.
That's
wow.
A long time.
So Daisy, it says here, wins the title on December 1989. And then on the side it says, aired on tape delay. Guess when? Actually, that's not so bad. May 26, 1990. It's only like 6 months.
Yeah. 6 months. It's like Lucha Underground.
See, I saw 80s and I saw 90s, and I'm like, how late? But it was just the next year, yeah. So it looks like it ran to about 1990 from 86.
All right. So. 4 years of 4 years of product to watch.
Yeah. And
I wonder what the best GLOW match is.
Oh, man. Well, here it's saying that Colonel Nachika defeated Tina Ferrari for the title. So, in December 87. So that's probably it.
Yeah, I mean, The Ninotchka girl could work a little bit, it seemed like.
Yeah, so. Ivory could somewhat work in the future, so.
Yeah, I would imagine that's like a real match.
Yeah, that's for the title.
Yeah.
All right, let's end this shit.
All right.